Even though stocks are trading at all-time highs, that doesn't stop this week's expert from predicting that a major market crash is due soon in 2021. Macro strategist David Hunter predicts that stocks will drop as much as 65 to 80% this year.
Saying that following a melt-up, we're going to see a global deflationary bust. First deflationary downturn since the Great Depression. And I think that the global bust will probably be the biggest recession slash depression that we've seen in the post-World War II era.
Hello, and welcome back to Peak Prosperity. I'm Peak Prosperity co-founder Adam Taggart. And as usual, we are here to make sense of these markets and in money in general. This week, we're joined by a very special guest. We're being joined by contrarian macro investor David Hunter. David is the chief market strategist at Contrarian Macro Advisors. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. So for those of you who might not know David, he's got almost 50 years experience in the investment management space. He started his career as a fund manager for large institutions, managed some pensions, and then became a sell side analyst and now is an independent macro strategist with very defined views on what's driving these crazy markets. David, you have been very vocal recently of late, over 2020, in predicting several things. Some of your predictions that have really caught my attention are, you predicted a very large melt-up in asset prices. You have then also predicted at some point a very large market correction. I'll let you put an actual number on that, but I by very large, I mean sort of north of 50%. And you've also predicted much higher valuations for the precious metals. So I know you've published those predictions throughout 2020. We've certainly got a melt up. That is absolutely, you were spot on there. I'm curious if that general outlook I outlined is still your forecast. And if so, or if not, can you sort of clarify what you see coming ahead as well as your rationale behind those predictions?
Sure. Yeah, my views are pretty much the same as they've been for the last 9 months. Back in March, I think people thought I was nuts because I said whenever after the 3 week swoon, I said, no, it still looks like we're intact and we're going to see a run to a secular top and it'll end in a parabolic melt up. So, and I used 42 to 4,500 as my range back then. Now I've taken the lower end of that off and I just say we're heading 4,500, NASDAQ probably 15,000. Dow 36,000. And my guess is that my target's going to prove conservative. So I think they're in the ballpark, but we could exceed them. In terms of gold and silver, yeah, I'm pretty much in the same camp I was. I've been calling for a run to 2,500 on gold and silver. I've raised, I used all last year a number around 35. I think my target on silver is probably too low and I've raised it up to 45 to 50. So there's a big, I think, a run up here in the next few months. I think this is going to be fairly fast and front-ended this year. And then I am out there and have been for a while saying that following a melt-up, we're going to see a global deflationary bust. First deflationary downturn since the Great Depression. And I think that the global bust will probably be the biggest recession slash depression that we've seen in the post-World War II era. I define a bust basically as something that could be as damaging as a depression, but as fast as a recession. So it's not going to be long and drawn out like the Great Depression was, more likely contained within a 12 to 18 month time horizon, but do the damage of a depression. We're just so leveraged. You know, we have a system that's got, you know, more than 250 trillion now in debt, you know, across the globe, and derivative exposure to the tune of quadrillions. So both of those are types of leverage. And I think They really exacerbate things on the way up, but they can really make things a lot worse on the way down.
Okay, so we've probably just freaked out about 98% of the viewers here. Just to put some relativity to the numbers that you mentioned there in your predictions. So you predicted S&P to 4,500. It's currently trading at 3,800 right now. So that's more than a 10% jump from here to there, and you're predicting this over the next couple of months. You said NASDAQ at 15,000, that's currently at 13,000. Again, that's more than probably like a 15%+ from here. And then gold at 2,500, it's currently around 19, and silver somewhere between 45 to 50 bucks. And I think today it's trading in the sort of 27 dollar range. So that's almost a doubling for silver. All right. So those are big numbers. Then of course you're saying a deflationary, depressionary sort of correction from there. And I'm sorry, did you put a general number around that? I know I had sort of alluded to over 50%, but I think I've seen predictions of yours that were higher.
Yeah, I've used a number out there, and I'm sure people who see me on quote Twitter freak out, because I use a number like a potential 80% decline, peak to trough. I'm not sure it'll be that large. That's the potential. I'd certainly say something in excess of what we saw in the 2008-09 period. And I think that one was 60% plus. So somewhere, 65 to 80% is what I think. And I do think there's a real chance it's going to be the higher end of that range, the worst of it. And again, it's a lot of it is because of the leverage. And keep in mind, this is global. So it's not going to be just US, it's going to be across the board. And the only good news about it is, I think, because of the leverage, it unwinds quickly. So we could be in a recovery mode as early as sometime next year.
Okay, I know you're predicting the future, which is a very difficult thing to do with exactitude, obviously, but you're expecting this very large 65 to 80% crash to likely happen as soon as some point this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd say the first quarter is certainly going to be the melt up. It may spill over into the second quarter, but I think by the time we get to the second half of this year, we're already in the downside of this thing. And again, markets lead economies. So let's say we make a secular top in the market by March or April. That doesn't mean the economy is rolling over that. And the economy is probably not going to show why the market's starting to roll the third or into the fourth quarter. So, there's lead time, but the market itself could unwind so quickly that, that helps contribute to the rollover in the economy.
Okay. And, folks, that sounds like a apocalyptic correction in the markets. I'll let David expound on this in a bit. It is not without precedent. And I do want to be clear, too, that we have been talking on this program for many, many months about the potential for the market to correct at that level of magnitude. And the guys here at New Harbor, who will be talking with us after David on this program today, they can reiterate some of those some of the math behind that. But as extreme as it sounds, we've been covering for all of 2020 on this program, the almost inexhaustible parade of data points that show that the market is more overextended and more overvalued than it has been at perhaps at any point in history. So as extreme as what David is predicting, it isn't so extreme, it doesn't look as extreme once you really dig into the data. Of course, if it indeed does happen, it's going to feel incredibly extreme. And David, I want to get to that in just a minute on what that world's going to be like. But before I do, real quickly, we try to be as relevant as possible for our listeners on this program. I know one of the questions people are going to have, listening to this discussion is, well, okay, if the market looks like it's got maybe 15% more, juice ahead of it before this correction, do I try to get in the markets and capture that and then try to get out before the big crash? Or is this the type of thing where that's, quote unquote, chasing nickels in front of the steamroller, and you just want a position for safety now and make sure that you capture the safety element of the collapse and not become collateral damage of it?
Yeah, I have to be careful. I have to walk a fine line and not actually provide guidance on that, but I'll say a couple things about it. One is, we may be very close time-wise to a top, meaning within the next few months, but 15% returns are what we hope to get over a year or 18 months worth of time horizon. So I always tell people, kind of let some of this play out. And then out of the other side of my mouth, I say, look, it's a risk-reward business. You're never going to get it exactly right. So really, I would say more than anything else, it's people have to look at their own kind of risk profile and know what they can sleep with and what they can't. And for some people that are, more nimble, playing it here, I think makes some sense. For those that are, kind of longer term investors, we are at the latter stage of this now. I call this and I'm fairly unique in this. I think people have different dates what they call a secular bull market. I date this secular bull market back to 1982. And I do that because that's when disinflation kicked in. We went from the high inflation, and that was the beginning of the rollover in inflation. We've been ratcheting down inflation ever since. And that contributed to the big PE multiple run up in the stocks over the last 40 years. So, if we're in the last 3 months of something that's been going on for, 38 going into 39 years, it tells you you're really down to the tail end. But again, it still is kind of, everybody's got to decide for themselves, what are they comfortable with? What I will say is I do think I'm pretty comfortable with my target of 4,500 on the S&P, and I wouldn't be surprised if it does exceed that by a little bit. So, you can have some seller's remorse if you jump out here and cover 15% ground in a couple months. But it's hard for me to say. Everybody's got to make that decision for themselves.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned, multiple expansion. And I mean, that's really been the name of the game over the past year. It's been this 40-year trend that you were talking about, but multiple expansion has just accelerated over the past year. And I'll throw up a chart here of Tesla. I'll throw up a chart here of the Russell 2000, two very different types of equities, but still showing just ridiculous market multiple expansion over the past 9 months or so. Russell, corrected like everything else. But Tesla, I mean, Jesus, you look at Tesla over the past year, showing somebody this morning, I think over the past 15 months, Tesla went from around $40 to $800, right? And that's not because their earnings went up by anywhere near like that. That's just all multiple expansion. Of course, we've got things like Bitcoin, shooting the moon right now as well. So you talked about the debts that need to be cleared, which is a big part of your prediction for sort of this depressionary correction. And I don't disagree at all. I think that that's been a huge element of the Frankensteinian markets we find ourselves in, is that it's just built atop so much malinvestment that's been enabled by essentially free credit to most of the companies that are out there, extremely low debt and low borrowing. But there's also been just a monstrous amount of liquidity in there provided by world central banks and whatnot. And so where I'm going with this is, I think there's a, beyond just bad debts that need to clear, you talk about, it being a probably rapid collapse because of the debts just all going bad at once. And then you talk about rebuilding. Do you see it more as rebuilding after that period of time? Or do you see it as the central planners basically just stepping in and just flipping the printing presses on maximum to just provide as much liquidity as possible? So even though prices might recover, it may not be like a healthy economic recovery. It just might be like the world's biggest sugar rush of liquidity.
Yeah, it's kind of in between. By the way, I oftentimes get kind of put in that category with the real, what I call the gloom and doomers, the guys that, whether the Austrian school guys or who, but, the Peter Schiffs who say, we're down for the count now, this is the end, and, everything going forward is going to be pretty awful. Where I separate myself out is, yeah, my downside here is pretty awful, but I do believe there's another recovery cycle to follow this. this isn't, you know, a long depression after we roll over here. And I do think the balance of the decade, once we come out of the bust, is going to be a very different cycle. Our last 40 years, it's been primarily consumer-led. I think the cycle that we have starting in 2022 and carrying through into the late decade is going to be industrial-driven, inflation-driven, commodity-driven. And the reason for that is because a lot of the response to the bust is going to be fiscal stimulus, infrastructure spending. And that's not just here, that's over in Europe, that's over in China, China with the Belt and Road. So we're going to see, unlike what we've had for each of the last many cycles, we're going to see this one driven by capacity expansion. Over here, it's going to be reshoring, bringing some capacity back from China. It's going to be buildup of military. It's going to be buildup of, you know, doing the roads and bridges and the electric grid, et cetera. So it's going to be a different leadership than what we've had for, you know, the last few cycles. And, you know, and commodities are going to be probably at the top of the list of things that do well. So it is, yes, it is very much driven by massive, you know, the response to the bust will take massive money printing or money creation, along with massive fiscal expansion, fiscal spending. So you're not going to see, by the way, and I'm pretty unique with this, I think, this view, you're not going to see this be the peak in the debt cycle, you know, this super cycle of debt that we've had. I think we have an involuntary debt liquidation cycle here in the bust, meaning, you know, this is going to be a big step back in debt, but then it gets rebuilt to even higher highs, most of it sovereign debt, because, you know, the Treasury is going to be issuing debt left and right to cover all that fiscal stimulus, and the Fed's going to be buying all that debt, monetizing it. So, and the same things are going to be happening over in Europe and over in Asia. So ultimately, that $250 trillion in debt we have today, I think will peak out probably later in the decade at something more like $375 trillion. So another 50% leg up. So this is not the big debt implosion that, you know, a Peter Schiff would probably think we are at. But I think we do have a big step back before we move higher. And by the way, these are not endorsements. These are not policy endorsements. I'm not saying this is good. I'm saying this is inevitable.
Okay. Well, really interesting. So just to be clear, you see this as more of a cyclical bear market in the debt super cycle than you see it as, but you still see the debt super cycle in a secular bull market, if you will. So, okay, great. All right. Well, what I love about what you said there, David, in your outlook is it's a real validation of why we do this this video series, is we talk to experts like you from all over the world, from a whole bunch of different disciplines, because we're all trying to make sense of what's going on. And I love it when I sort of see patterns and commonalities amongst different experts who use different methodologies, but they're coming to sort of similar or complementary conclusions. So you talked about as commodities being likely to do well for sort of two reasons. One, you see you're more sanguine than I would say than a number of guests in saying that you see some real sort of true economic growth ahead of us after this big correction. But I think you also say, look, there's also going to be a ton of you know, money printing as well, both of which should drive commodity prices higher. Now, we've had everyone from Jim Rogers, you know, who's a long-term sort of currency expert, who has come back on and said, look, the central banks are going to, you know, make what they've done before look like child's play and therefore buy commodities to preserve purchasing power. We had Steen Jacobsen on a few weeks ago who said, he sees the new administration's going to be spending a lot more money than in the past on infrastructure, likely, you know, energy infrastructure build out and whatnot, but just so much of the American infrastructure is old and crumbling and needs to be rebuilt and is becoming a constraint on the digital economy, that the digital economy's chief you know, constraint right now is the fact that it can't fulfill the orders that it sells on that last mile when you order your product from Amazon, right? So there's a ton of investment that needs to happen logistically and infrastructure wise. That's going to put secular demand for currencies in play. And then we had Danielle DiMartino Booth and Axel Merck on last week talking about Fed policy, because they're two very experienced Fed watchers, and they both predict higher inflation and mentioned that it's going to, you know, give a tailwind to currency prices, commodity prices. So it's really nice to see so many differentiated experts still coming to similar conclusions. And none of what we offer here is financial advice, but we're trying to give you areas to look at to consider as an investor, and that definitely seems to be one. All right, so let's just talk for a minute about for people that are watching this, they're concerned about, you know, the developments that we've just talked about. Again, I know you're not offering financial advice, but, what types of general, I hate to use the word guidance, but what would you encourage concerned investors to be considering right now in terms of actions that they could be taking?
Yeah, I'm gonna answer that in two parts. One is, I really caution people that, particularly with, and I'm not a schizophrenic, even though my forecast might lead to think so, because I've got these extremes going in both directions. But I just want people to realize markets are not linear. So you can't just hear commodities are going to be great. And this is, I see this by other forecasters out there, and people providing advice. You're getting a lift up here in commodity prices for the first time in many years. You know, we are seeing, copper move up, gold and silver, of course, but and other commodities, even the ag commodities. And I'm seeing a lot of people saying, well, we're starting to overweight commodities and we're really thinking that's the future. The problem is you've got between now and what I call the recovery cycle, a bust. And I compare it to standing on the south rim of the Grand Canyon and looking across to the north rim and thinking you can walk straight across. You know, there's something in between that's going to really wake you up. And so I just caution people that I think commodities are cheap, cheap, cheap relative to the almost anything else out there, but they've got to get through that bust, because that's going to be a big negative GDP around the world. And that will hit demand for commodities pretty hard. So you may, whether they retest the lows, whether they go halfway, I don't know. But that's just one thing I'd caution is don't think you can be linear with this stuff and not suffer, because there's going to be a period. Now, some people can be long-term investors and say, I don't care about the, what happens in between, but just know about it at least. The other thing I would say is, from a longer term standpoint, meaning over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, bonds are also at the top of a 39 year cycle. They started with the long bond at the 30 year treasury at 15%, the 10 year at 15% back in 1981. We're now down to 1% on the 10 year, was down below 0.5%. And I think in the bust, you'll probably see it go back to zero, one last move down. But in the recovery cycle, it's going to be inflation-driven cycle for the first time in four decades. Rates are going to be moving up and moving up quite dramatically through the decade. So all that money that's parked in bond funds that's been built up over decades is probably one of the worst places you can be from a money management standpoint. The returns there are going to be negative going forward after this year. This year, you got one more move down, I think, after this move up. But so I don't know if that helps people, but I would just caution that we've had such a long period where PE multiples were moving up, interest rates were moving down. You could buy interest-sensitive utilities, et cetera. When you get into an inflation environment, which we haven't been in since the 1970s, it's an entirely different kind of investment environment. You have to be in things where those companies can outpace inflation with their returns, or your stocks can outpace inflation. And that narrows the list down a lot commodities will be at the top of that list, though, and I would just highlight those.
All right, I think that's really good perspective. And just to summarize, you see commodities as being relatively very well positioned, but of course, that's sort of after the dust settles, right? And so something that we have echoed many, many times on past episodes of the series here is that this really is one of the, if not the most treacherous times for investors. There's been such a forced push of investors up the risk curve over the past 10 years or so. If you've wanted any kind of yield at all, you've had to get out of traditionally safe assets, cash, bonds, et cetera, and go chase those yields. And of course, the big worry is if there's a major correction and you're long way out in the risk curve, you get destroyed, right? So, we've always told people that we think, this probably has an inflationary end, but if you believe that there's a probability of deflationary spikes along the way, you can't just position yourself for full inflation because you'll get killed in those interim deflationary environments. And I see you nodding your head here, so it seems like you agree. Very good thing to underscore for folks there. Okay, so question for you about cash. So a lot of people who are watching here have been suspicious of these markets for a long time, and many moved to cash a while ago and have had trouble figuring out how to move, ahead on here, because they don't want to not get any return on that cash and have inflation just eat away at it. But they're worried that if they deploy that, where markets are currently valued, that they're going to be that last fool who jumps in right before the market corrects, right? So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would presume you might say cash, not a bad place to be right now, given that the market may correct hard this year. Once it does, if it does go down 65 to 80% or so, as you think it might, then you could begin to deploy that cash at much, much, much better valuations than what you're able to get today. My sense is, though, that you would sort of, encourage people to consider once we get into the recovery phase. It sounds like, given the response of central banks and stuff like that, sounds like you're probably not a big fan of cash 2 years out of the recovery phase. That, in other words, if you've got a cash stockpile now, hang on to it until the correction, but then be active in deploying it as time goes on.
Yeah, actually, in the recovery cycle, in this last 10, 20, 30, 40 years with rates moving down over time, there are times when they move up, but over time, they dropped from 15 to 1. You're going to have the opposite going on. I think you may retrace 40 years of rate declines in less than 10. So you could go from 0 to 1% rates back to 15% by the end of the decade because of inflation, hyperinflation. And so ironically, and this has not been the case for a long time, so most people in this world today have never invested like this, but back in the early 80s, when rates were in the double digits, your strategy as a bond manager was to buy treasury bills and roll them every 6 months, because every time you rolled them at ever higher rates. If you bought a long bond and rolled it, rates were up and your bond value was down. So actually, in the next cycle, it'll start from low rates, but your strategy would be at some point, a couple of years in, buying treasury, if you want part of your portfolio to be in bond circuit or cash circuit, your strategy would be in, commercial paper or treasury bills, rolling it, every 60, 90, 100 days, because rates are going to be ever higher as inflation moves up. And that's just not a mindset anybody has today, because it's been a long time since we've had that environment. So that's one thing. And the other thing I would just say is precious metals, both gold and silver, I think there's a huge runway ahead. Now they'll have their hit during the bust. I mean, I think they'll do better than the market, but they'll suffer a hit like every asset. But I'm looking for gold to go to 10,000 plus in this decade. I'm looking for silver to go $300 plus in this decade. And when I say commodities in the next cycle, I'm also talking energy. I think oil could get back over $300, get to $300 or higher by the end of this decade. And that's not something most people expect, because they assume, alternative energy is going to be pushed pretty hard. We just can't get there you know, we're not going to be able to replace oil that quickly. So I think as the industrial economy uses more and more energy, you're going to get back into a peak oil situation where, you know, oil moves up pretty sharply.
All right. We don't have time to get too deep into that, but I do want to say that I think the peak prosperity shares a lot of your concerns there. It's something, peak oil is something that we've tracked for a long time. A lot of people think it doesn't exist anymore after the past 10 years and the whole shale oil miracle. There's a very data-driven rebuttal to that I'm not going to try to summarize here. All I'll say is that some of the geological petrochemical experts that we talked to, like Art Berman, are predicting substantially higher oil prices ahead in the near term. Not $300 a barrel yet, but substantially higher prices in 2021, probably starting around June or so. So there are some real supply constraints that are coming in the near term. So I'll leave it at that. All right. So gosh, David, I could talk with you forever, but we've already gone long beyond the allotted time I meant to take up from you. So thank you for sharing so much of your time with us. And it's been a really fascinating and I think very valuable discussion. In parting, I just want to get your thought on this real quick. You said something that I've heard one or two other of our past guests say that I just want to underscore, which is if we are entering an era of secularly rising inflation, that there are almost no financial professionals left who have any real world experience investing in that type of environment. It requires an entirely different playbook, an entirely different way of thinking, as you just illustrated there with the T-bills. A bit of advice that we are, you know, telling people is make sure that A, you work with a financial advisor that at the very least understands all the concerns that we've talked about here today. And then secondly, make sure you understand one that, you know, at least can prove to you that they've got the mindset to be prepared for such an inflationary environment, if it does occur, because the standard, you know, real estate broker 101 approach that's, you know, worked well in a secularly rising, environment where all boats have risen with the rising tide for the past 30 years, that is going to be the exact worst strategy you want going forward. So I see you nodding here, but anything you want to comment on that would be useful.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing it brings to mind is one of the areas that's going to really change, and it's music to the ears of active managers, is you're no longer going to have passive management outperforming being an easy money place, because the benefit of the S&P index, for example, is that in a period when multiples were rising because rates were declining through many years, you just put your money in and the index did as well as anything else. In an inflationary environment, you get the opposite effect where multiples are shrinking. So you can't just kind of go along and ride the wave. And that means you've got to get with managers that are better stock pickers, that can pick the right sectors and pick the right stocks that will fit the inflationary environment. It's a very different mindset. And so I echo your words in terms of saying, you know, when you seek out a financial advisor, seek out one that has that understanding.
Great. All right. Well, so as we do every week, I'm going to be following up with the folks at New Harbor Financial right after we say goodbye to you, David, and we'll be talking about what the market's done in the past week. But what you just sort of said is a great segue into their material. But as we let you go, my last question for you is for folks that have enjoyed this discussion and are interested in learning more about you and your work and perhaps following you, where should they go?
Yeah, probably the best thing is to go to Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Dave H. Contrarian. I also have a quarterly macro letter that I put out by subscription. So it's not a freebie, but if they are interested in that, they can just DM me, direct message me on Twitter. I do not have a website, so I'm kind of hidden that way, but follow me on Twitter is probably the best thing.
All right, excellent. Well, we will put your Twitter handle up on an overlay when you're giving it there when we edit this piece. David, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time, really appreciate the insights. And we will definitely have you back on in 2021 if we get that 65% plus correction that you've been predicting.
Okay, well, thanks, Adam. I really enjoyed it.
A lot of fun. All right. Well, Mike and John, yet another phenomenal guest here on the program, David Hunter. I know you guys are avid fans of his on Twitter. So it was really fun to have him on here. Guys, I don't think we could have gotten a better, tee up for you guys than David provided. But, I guess before I put words in your mouth, what are some of the biggest things he said that resonated with you guys? John, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, we basically agree with his basic prognosis. We can debate how much, if any further melt up is yet in store, but I think it doesn't much matter, especially when you kind of correlate it to the time frame that he's talking about, on the scale of a short number of months. In our minds, and certainly in the day-to-day job of what we need to do for our clients, most of whom are individuals and families who aren't in any position to be rolling the dice on such a finely gradated timescale. You got to get that perfectly right to get any benefit of any further melt up. Otherwise, you're in the very steep and accelerating downturn that he talks about. But we basically agree with him on the trajectory of where we're going, whether it's from the current market level or a market level that's 15% higher. We don't think it much matters, because the ultimate downside is what we think is very soundly spelled out in the data. I guess we also agree in concept with him that this need not be an end of the world kind of thing. There's just simply on financial market data alone, you can conclude that this is a absolutely egregious bubble. Assume away all geopolitical conflict, assume away all domestic strife that we've saw on display in the Capitol insurgents yesterday. And just on market data alone, any, I think, prudent and in tune investor should be, raising really loudly the caution alarm.
All right, Mike, and on your end?
Yeah, just looking at some numbers, like John said, we basically agree with him. We just really don't know what's going to happen near term, whether we shoot higher and then collapse or ultimately go down from here. But in a much shorter fashion, but totally agree with him that we could have an 80% drop from here. An 80% drop from here would bring us to about 760 on the S&P and probably would give projected returns of close to 15% or maybe 12 to 15% on the S&P over the following decade. But just think about that for a minute. An 80% drop from here would be 760. If we go to 4,500 first and then have an 80% drop, we'll be at 900. The difference between 760 and 900 is not that great, right? Particularly when you're looking downhill from 3,800, so the rubber meets the road with us, with how we're managing money. We have to decide what to do, and we don't think that anybody can time the top exactly. And, I know David certainly said he couldn't either. And I'm sure he would agree that nobody can. So, the bottom line is you're going to have to be a little early or a little late. We choose a little bit early. And I know we've been saying this for quite a while, so we fully admit that, but we would rather be mostly out of risk assets here. We're seeing nothing but just runaway FOMO here. Lots of fear of missing out, FOMO, psychology, emotion, panic buying. Who knows how long it can go? Maybe it can go on quite a bit longer, but ultimately I think that those that step aside here or even any time over the last few months will be ultimately happy that they did.
Yeah. Well, look, guys, this is why we do this series, right? Is we're trying to provide useful, actionable intelligence for people that are wrestling with, okay, how do I be a good steward of my wealth savings, right? And to your point, Mike, it is such a crazy environment, and I feel comfortable speaking for many of our guests who have much more experience than I do. And we do, we're all about the same age. We're all kind of around the 50 mark, but talking to investors that are folks that have been managing capital for 40, 50 years, they say this is the craziest market that they've ever seen. And I think that you really have to, keep that at the forefront of your mind, because if you don't, it's super hard not to get caught up in all this FOMO that you're talking about, Mike. And I just talked about some of the stats here, but like, you know, Elon Musk today became the richest man in the world, right? Tesla's up another 6% today. 6% is like an average day for Tesla. Like I mentioned, in the past 15 months, it's gone from $40 a share to now over $800 a share. That is absolutely ridiculous for a company that has barely grown its earnings or revenues over that time period, right? I mentioned the incredibly huge valuation increase in the Russell 2000, you know, which are the smaller companies, the ones that are really getting beaten up by the lockdowns right now, the companies that are at risk of going out of business, and yet the multiples on that index have just been going bananas. You know, every Bitcoin investor had the best week of their life this week, right? I think Bitcoin hit 40,000 today at some point, right? And that was, I mean, we just did a piece, what guys, 2.5, maybe 3 months ago with Alex Saunders on Bitcoin, and Bitcoin was trading around, I want to say like $12,000 or so. It's now 40. So there's this, you know, as David predicted all last year, this is a true melt up, right? And these things tend to be exponential. And those who, you know, follow exponentials like we do here at Peak Prosperity, they know that hockey stick shape. And when you're, you know, at the very end of that hockey stick shape, you're getting greater gains. Each new incremental gain in an exponential chart is greater than the sum of all the gains leading up to that, right? So it feels like you're going to go broke if you don't jump on the train. It feels like you're going to be left behind. But unless it's truly different and trees can grow, you know, to the moon, which they never have before, and it never has been truly different before, you know, reality will interject, and you know, we can't predict with exactitude what's going to happen. But certainly guys like David, who have been investing, he's 47 years in the industry, he's followed these cycles, he has a pretty decent sense. And Mike, you just gave some numbers about, you know, if we see that type of correction, it's really not all that different, right? The 2008 correction got down to the mid 600s in the S&P. So if this one corrected to 800-900, you know, after a decade, that's really not that too far off, right? So it could definitely happen. And so again, it's just, it's so important for us to remind people, hey, you know, when you're here at the fever pitch of the mania, you really actually, you know, you can do yourself a favor by covering your ears, by getting defensive. And even if you miss out on that remaining 15, 20% of upside, if there's that, you know, type of correction that history shows tends to happen when things get this distorted, you are going to be way better positioned off than everybody who went all in and then ended up losing 65 to 80% of their wealth in the correction. And that's sort of, you know, I think that's David's sort of, once the dust settles, that's what will be down. And we all know that things tend to overcorrect before they stabilize. So it could be even worse, who knows? So anyways, I think that's so important, and it's why we have you guys on here every week, because you guys are that voice of reason. You're the ones talking to real people week after week who are, you know, trying to make that decision. Hey, do I continue to stay defensive, or do I, you know, jump back into this party and try to, you know, pick up what I can of what's left of it? So I guess as we close down here, guys, because it has been such a crazy week, we didn't even talk about, you know, as you alluded to, John, the takeover of the Capitol yesterday, which was in large part sparked by the Georgia elections, which gave control of the Senate to the Democrats. So we now have a true blue wave going forward, which, you know, you could understandably assume that that's going to mean more liquidity. So guys, as you are looking forward, I don't want to put you know, words in your mouth, but it sounds like you are remaining, you know, relatively defensive in cash because you expect a similar large correction coming. You are increasing, though, part of the portfolio slowly into more commodities. You mentioned last week you're getting more into energy than you've been recently. And so you're kind of, you know, getting more exposure into some of those commodity type spaces that that David was talking about, but you are keeping a large part of the portfolio still ready to be safe when there's a correction and then be deployed in the aftermath when valuations come down. Is that true?
Absolutely true. Don't really have any more to add. It's about as true as a statement we could say.
I've got one or two data points I'd just like to add. You know, it's true. We are adding some energy, but you know, there's some things happening under the surface that maybe not everyone's noticing. You know, I mean, the S&P is up 50 points this week. The Russell's up 120 points, you know, big moves. That's like 6% on the S&P. But VIX is still up there. It's flat. You know, VIX is, or the volatility index, which measures risk, is still stubbornly sitting at 23. It's saying something. is markets going vertical with no pullbacks, with nothing but FOMO and panic buying, and volatility is staying up there. At some point, that's going to matter.
Yeah, and Mike, just to explain that for people that maybe don't follow the VIX as closely as we do, volatility is something that has been suppressed by, or let me put it this way, it has been suppressed for large part of the past 10 years.
And Decade.
And it's usually an indicator that people are not worried, right? And so as Mike is saying, it's actually interesting to see prices continue to break out to all-time highs, and yet the VIX remain relatively elevated. It can go a lot higher than where it is, but it's not down in the basement where it's been kept for the past 10 years. So it's sort of a contrary indicator that says, even while people are partying hard, there's still enough worry in there that the VIX isn't getting, you know, crammed down in the dungeon like it used to be.
It's stubbornly high, right? It's not a timing indicator, but it's stubbornly high, and it means something. We'll find out. It means risk is higher than being widely perceived. And the other thing that's kind of happening in a stealth fashion over the last week is bond yields are starting to go up. You know, the 10-year is now closed today at 1.07.
Yeah, okay, finally so broke over one. Yeah.
We've been talking about that week after week after week. You know, last week it was 0.91 and boom, here we are at 107. It's a pretty clear technical breakout. It probably, you know, means that there's a, you know, some kind of trend change. David said a minute ago, when there's a deflationary collapse, he said, you know, we might go back down towards zero. That may be possible, may be true. But what we see right now is that not a lot of people are talking about it. Yields are starting to pop up, and a surprise kind of move in higher interest rates would be seen as a big negative for this market.
Yeah, interestingly though, Adam, while, you know, treasuries, which are, you know, meant, you know, measurably the, you know, least risky bond out there, you know, while the yields on those have popped up, the prices have gone down. High yield junk bonds still remain at their highs, and the premium, risk premium relative to treasuries is getting ever thinner. So that's another data point just showing the complacency in the risk markets that is about as extreme as it's ever been. You know, I like to just add, we are 50, so we haven't been through all the cycles that someone like David has, but we have the data that we can look at, and effectively we can live and study those market cycles as if we were there, and what worked and what didn't. You know, there's a lot of there's a piece that's making making a lot of headlines the last couple of days. Jeremy Grantham, who I think has at least 3 or 5 years further experience in the markets than David does. He's been at this over 50 years. Very well-known guy, head of GMO's investment group. He came out with a piece this week, basically a very more psychological, emotional piece, talking about undeniably we're in a real McCoy bubble that he compares only to 1929 and 2000. Nothing else even comes close. And he as well was calling for a melt-up over the last several years. So you know, we're starting to see some really seasoned folks, you know, really, you know, put their foot down and say, this is absurd. So,
yeah, we've been tracking that, you know, as these guys have been saying that, and you're right. Yeah. Jeremy, I mean, he's been ringing the warning bell for a long time, but he did just come out with this exceptionally sternly worded warning. And Carl Icahn just a few days ago did as well. And, you know, Carl Icahn's a very different type of investor than Jeremy Grantham. And again, as I said earlier, I think it's really important when you hear people with different methodologies coming to the same conclusions, you really better pay attention. By the way, Jeremy Grantham wrote one of the back cover testimonials for the Crash Course book when it was published back in 2011. So we're especially huge fans of Jeremy. So yeah, guys, all right. So, you know, in wrapping things up here, we're at the end of our time, but it is, you know, it's been a crazy week, I guess is all I can say. You know, we sincerely hope that 2021 was going to be less crazy than 2020. And I think we had about 5 days of calm, and then yesterday happened. And yesterday is going to be historically important for a whole bunch of reasons. But one thing I do want to underscore is, just to flag, you know, John, just like you said, that junk bonds, which we would expect to see weakness occur there first, because those are technically the weaker players on the chessboard. You know, the fact that they're still, you know, fully bid is a sign that we have just a crazy mania going on. But similarly, yesterday, you know, we had the U.S. capital you know, stormed by protesters, not just a protest, but, you know, they stormed in, they chased out the lawmakers. You know, we had guys in bison hats, you know, standing at the speaker's desk in the rotunda there. And the markets still went up, right? Like, there is nothing, it seems, that can happen in these markets that, the markets can't interpret as short-term bullish, right? And that's a sign of, you know, that logic isn't driving the train here, right? That literally anything can be interpreted as a reason to continue to take these distorted valuations and stretch them, you know, even further. So I guess as we conclude here, I want to just give you guys the opportunity to talk to the viewer here, who I believe the average viewer of these videos is probably saying, guys, you know, I'm driving myself bananas here. My gut tells me to be super defensive, and just I sense that, you know, this is going to end in tears. I don't want to be collateral damage when this thing breaks down. But man, I look at the stock markets every day. Nothing stops this train. There's no news bad enough that the markets can't take it as a reason to go higher. And I'm looking at my brother-in-law, and he's investing in Bitcoin. He's investing in Tesla. And this guy's not a very smart guy, and he's just making money hand over fist right now. And I feel like I'm being left behind. And, you know, with perhaps now a united administration that, you know, that's Democratic, you know, maybe, you know, the concerns of more stimulus than not coming out of that just means that my, you know, cash savings are just going to get inflated away all the faster. So what would you guys say to that, to that you know, type of viewer? Because I know that that's who you talk to on a daily basis when we refer people over to you.
I'll take a first shot at that, Adam, because I had that conversation plenty over the last week. What I think is helpful for folks, and we're human too, we have that same emotion if we weren't grounded in data. That very thing is the defining feature of a bubble. The psychological and emotional angst that compels people to jump in. That is the bubble. So having some awareness that those feelings that one is feeling are exactly the things that are the feature of a bubble, I would hope would at least cause some pause to think about things and not feel so stupid, because bubbles make a lot of people end up stupid because of that very dynamic.
Right, John, well said. And as that brings to mind the great quote that we often cite here from John Hussman, that market mania has forced you to make a choice, either look like an idiot now or look like an idiot later. And of course, we think it's vastly preferable to look like an idiot now, which we interpret as remaining defensive, being conservative. Yes, you miss out on some of the remaining, you know, last percentage points of the melt up, but you avoid being collateral damage when the bubble bursts. And of course, those people are the ones who look like an idiot later and are at risk of getting fully wiped out. So, all right, guys, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time this week. We didn't really even have a chance to get into David's predictions about the precious metals, about much higher prices ahead for gold and silver. We'll have to get into that next time. All right. So as we wrap up here real quick, folks, if you like this video, if you enjoy this video series, take a quick second and just click the subscribe button down below to subscribe to this channel. Click the little bell icon right next to it. That way, when future videos are released, you'll get an alert and know that there's a new video out there. Of course, while you're down there, click the like button. That really does help in getting these videos discovered and shared across the internet. If you want to know who is going to be our guests in upcoming videos like this, and if you want to be able to contribute your voice and to whom you'd like to see as a guest expert on this program, just follow me on Twitter at Menlo Bear. It's a great way to find out what's going on and to, you know, again, share your opinions with us. And then lastly, if you're not familiar with this already, we have worked out an arrangement that we've had in place for about 10 years with John and Mike and the team at New Harbor Financial, where any Peak Prosperity viewer that contacts them can get a free portfolio audit from them, where they will sit down with you completely free of charge, no commitments involved, no strings attached. It's just a public service that they offer to the Peak Prosperity audience, where you know, they'll look at your current financial situation, they'll listen to you about your goals, and they will give you their advice. And if you end up not contacting with them, not working with them, that's totally fine. If you like them and you're having trouble finding a good financial advisor that thinks like them, definitely work with them. As we say here at Peak Prosperity, we just think you should be working, you know, given how treacherous today's current investing environment is and how distorted these markets are, we just feel you should be working with the guidance of a professional financial advisor who at least understands the risks that are in play that we've been talking about on this program, as well as the opportunities. So if you've got a good one, great. But if not, stick around to the end of the program here. We'll tell you how you can contact the folks at New Harbor. There's a form you fill out. It takes about 30 seconds max. If you haven't done it already, you should. And if it's been a while since you've talked to them, you should reach out and refresh that conversation. And with that, guys, thanks so much for joining me again. It's been another great week to react to. 2021 looks like it's going to keep us on our toes. I look forward to following whatever comes next with you guys next week.
See you soon.
Thanks, Adam. Have a good night.